This is a CBC podcast. With Concerts On Demand, you can enjoy performances from acts like Tegan and Sarah, the Toronto Symphony Orchestra, and the Peggy Lee Band whenever you want. Find your favorites at cbc.ca/radio2/COD.
Hi, I'm Ron Wilson. Welcome to your Edmonton AM podcast. Billions of dollars are spent every year in the global effort to combat the spread of HIV/AIDS. But is this money well spent? Dr. Elizabeth Pisani is an epidemiologist. She has spent more than a decade working for public health agencies around the world in the fight against HIV/AIDS. She claims many anti-HIV strategies have failed. Dr. Pisani is in Edmonton to speak to an audience in this city. Her lecture is sponsored by HIV Edmonton, and she is on Edmonton AM. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Have I got it right? Your lecture is titled Public Health Prostitution, the Mismatch Between Evidence and Policy in HIV?
That's exactly right. I call it public health prostitution because I think, sadly, HIV is an area where we're all selling ourselves to the highest bidder these days.
I don't understand. Who are we selling out to?
We're selling out to the sources of money, and the sources of money tend to go in areas where we have a lot of political support. So anything that's to do with women and innocent children are easy to fund. Anything that's to do with gay men, drug injectors, sex workers, which is where our epidemic is very much concentrated in every country outside of sub-Saharan Africa, much more difficult to get money for, even though that's where we need to be spending it.
So the point of prostitution, to make that point, is to reinforce that prostitutes, in fact, aren't part of the equation when it comes to getting funding?
No, it's not so much that. I published a book a little while ago called The Wisdom of Whores, Bureaucrats, Brothels, and the Business of AIDS. And the title was really a bit of a play on both the fact that as an epidemiologist, I learned a huge amount about my own trade from the people that I worked with, who are very much concentrated in the sex industry among gay men and among drug injectors, but also that I really believe that we are prostituting ourselves in the AIDS business and the development business more generally to the easy sources of funding and not making the difficult decisions that we need to really address this epidemic.
So you're calling out AIDS organizations, support groups, public health officials,
researchers, the World Health Organization, and the AIDS Mafia, of which I am a card-carrying member.
The AIDS Mafia?
I would say so.
Who's that?
Every business has one. People who make a living from perpetuating a situation where we're more concerned than we need to be about some parts of the epidemic, parts that are easy to sell and easy to address, and less concerned about really concentrating resources where we need to be spending them.
And that concentration should be where?
Well, here in Edmonton, the highest number of new infections are among people who inject drugs. You've got the highest rate in the country of HIV among drug injectors, according to the surveillance figures, which are not all that good. But you've got up to 24% at last count among drug injectors. 70% of those people in Edmonton self-identify as Aboriginals. So that would be an obvious place to start. Elsewhere in Alberta, for example, in Calgary, much higher rates among gay men than we have here in Edmonton. So those are the populations where we really need to be doing something very, very pointed. The problem, I think, partly with HIV is that people are like, huh, AIDS? Isn't that over? Haven't we fixed that? Mm-hmm. And of course, the truth is that we've now, through treatment, made AIDS almost invisible. But HIV is still spreading at a significant rate.
And if you're to control the spread of HIV among injection drug users, is there an accepted public health approach to that?
Absolutely there is. In fact, it's the single most effective way besides blood safety of controlling HIV, and that is to make universal access to clean injecting equipment, free and decriminalized, so that people aren't picked up for carrying needles and syringes. It's worked very well in many parts of the world, including in parts of Canada. But you really need to make those syringes available to people at the point where they're going to be using them, without restrictions as to numbers, etc.
And those who advocate on behalf of people living with HIV and AIDS, those who are in public health, those who are in AIDS supports group, HIV Edmonton being one of them, are they not doing that? Are they not ensuring that that kind of public health approach is taken?
They're trying very hard. Unfortunately, politicians, particularly in the age of the federal government of Stephen Harper, are much less likely to be supportive of those measures.
Why do you say that?
For them, it's a political issue, and they know that there are no votes in doing nice things for junkies. And therefore, where there's an overtly conservative political climate, it's very difficult to spend money on helping populations who are largely marginalized.
Wouldn't you have to be in the head of those politicians to make that conclusion? I don't know that they lack compassion. I don't know that they lack, a heart. But you're suggesting that they do.
I'm suggesting that their policies are directly contradicted by the great weight of data from Canada and other countries around the world. So I can't see what else. Either they're stupid or they're lacking compassion for injectors. You choose. I don't think they're stupid.
So in your view, that this was a decision that they have taken to not put the money into that, or to decriminalize, depending what the circumstance might be, in order to ensure that clean needles are made available to people who inject drugs?
I think that their political priorities with their conservative voter base outweigh the importance of providing services to marginalized populations, yeah.
Do you see that changing?
I'm not familiar enough with currents of Canadian politics to be able to say that. In the United States, we had 20 years of ban on federal needle exchange, which was only lifted in the last week of December under the Obama administration. But it had persisted through both Democrat and Republican administrations for 20 years. So these things can be slow to change, even when the weight of evidence is very great.
I appreciate you coming in to speak with me this morning.
Thank you.
I've been joined in studio by Dr. Elizabeth Pisani. She is an epidemiologist. She's the author of The Wisdom Horrors, Bureaucrats, Brothels, and the Business of AIDS. She is in Edmonton to speak tonight at the Jubilee Auditorium. That speak is at 7 o'clock. Admission is free, but you can certainly make a donation. Again, this is brought to you by HIV Edmonton, so you can go to their website and get more information on that speak tonight here in Edmonton. Well, in spite of the weekend rain, Alberta is smoldering. Firefighters dealing with about three times the usual number of wildfires this year. Now, as this season heats up, many of those firefighters are learning how to battle the flames at a training center in Hinton. The CBC's Paul Moore went there to watch them in action. He's on Edmonton AM. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Ron.
So if I was at this fire training center in Hinton, what would it look like?
Well, Ron, it feels like a military training camp. There's a bunkhouse, there's a cafeteria, a recreation room with sofas where people can relax. But the training center is also full of young, healthy, and really fit people, many of whom walk around wearing matching uniforms or yellow jumpsuits with reflective silver tape. And for 50 years, the Hinton Fire Training Center has been where the people who fight Alberta's wildfires come to learn how to do their job.
Okay. So what kind of training happens there?
Well, it's not easy. That much is for certain. Most of the trainees every morning starts with a 10-kilometer run at 6 in the morning. So you thought morning radio was bad.
No kidding.
Then after breakfast, they get to the fun stuff like this. When I visited the training center, some more senior members were practicing rappelling down from a helicopter. It was really cool, Ron. The chopper hovers about 100 feet above the ground, and they gracefully slide down a rubber and nylon rope. They can land on all sorts of terrain, anything from open fields to dense forests and steep slopes. Now, in a real fire situation, this would be the quickest way for them to get on the ground and to start working.
Okay. What about actually fighting the fires? Are they able to practice that?
Yeah, for sure. And they do their best to simulate a fire without actually burning anything.
That's cool.
Here's an exercise from one of their courses for team leaders.
Yeah. All called. Okay, Monday, reconnect the hose blades as we come by.
Yeah, cool.
Now, as you hear there, the trainees are spraying down a long section of toilet paper that their instructor snaked through the underbrush. Now, Ron, the idea is the toilet paper represents a pretend fire line, and the fire isn't out unless the toilet paper is completely disintegrated.
Okay, so they're not burning anything.
They're
just simulating.
They're just simulating, gotcha. Exactly. So they're pumping water from a nearby river and quickly pulling hoses through the bush, racing to see how quickly they can put out this fake fire. Now, it's important to note that not all the activities at the training center are this exciting. There's also plenty of classroom time where teams learn things like weather patterns and fire behavior, but the training is very intense, and it's designed to make sure that the firefighters are both mentally and physically fit.
And just how fit will they need to be this season?
Very fit, Ron. If this fire season continues like it has been, these firefighters are going to have a long, busy summer. Usually by this point in the year, there have been a little more than 100 wildfires in Alberta, give or take. This year, there have already been more than 300.
Yeah, we've already had one reported this morning just up by Beaumont. Given that this year is already looking as bad as those numbers would suggest, Paul, are more firefighters training than in Hinton?
No, there's not. The training center is open year-round, and right now is their busiest time of the year. The government usually hires about 600 firefighters each year, 300 on contract and 300 staff. They get deployed to 43 firefighting and 14 air tanker bases across the province. But the Minister of Sustainable Resources, Mel Knight, told me that even though the fire situation is, as he called it, very severe this year, the province isn't hiring any more wildfire fighters than usual, so they aren't training any more people than usual in Hinton.
Are they changing the training at all in preparation for what clearly has already been a very busy year?
Officially, no. Greg Adams has worked with the Hinton facility for about 15 years. I talked to him as he was helping teach a group of rookies how to rappel. He says they're always prepared for the worst, so even in a busy season, there's no reason to change what they do.
Essentially, we do train for a bad fire season. And if it's not, then that's fine. But then at least if it is a bad one, we're prepared for it. But at least now, with the dry forest as well, as like there's been several fires in the area, it just gets your mind in the right place so that you know what you're going to encounter when you go out.
Well, radio hosts are talking about it. People I run into are talking about how dry it is and the fact that we've seen all these fires. Are people who are actually going to be fighting it talking about it?
For sure, Ron. Everyone at the training center is certainly thinking about the dry conditions. Cody Streberg says she loves the rush and the adrenaline of fighting fires. This year, she'll be leading a group of firefighters for the first time. And she says she plans to prepare her recruits to spring into action quickly and often.
We'll probably be a lot busier, so I think right off the bat, initially, once I get my crew, get the pump set up right away, get everything working, get some experience, some training in, and just so everyone's in the same level, everyone's ready to go and knows what to expect.
So the message at the training center this year really is that they're ready for anything, and for now, they just have to wait until they're deployed. And then they can start doing what they're trained to do.
Paul, thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Ron.
And that's the CBC's Paul Moore here on Edmonton AM. And if you're just tuning into the radio and came in halfway through Paul's report, we'll be sure to have this story on our website at cbc.ca/EdmontonAM. And we'll also include it in our daily podcast. Don't forget, you can download that podcast by visiting our website and looking for the link on the right-hand side. And again, our website, cbc.ca/EdmontonAM. That wraps up your Edmonton AM podcast. I'm Ron Wilson. Tune in to Edmonton AM weekday mornings from 6 until 8:30 on CBC Radio, AM 740, FM 93.9. Don't forget, if you missed the show, you can listen to most of our stories on our website. Log on to cbc.ca/EdmontonAM or, of course, download this podcast.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.